This is Abundance. Rules of Engagement, X-Ray Insight. Personal insight can come from many ways. Those aha moments occur without our permission, but we have to be paying attention or we may miss them. Usually, a great new perspective or a head-slapping moment happens when we least expect it, but I hope you are having some in your life. They are one of my favorite experiences. Sometimes I find out things I really didn't want to do or want to know, and sometimes it can save a life. I'll use X-rays as the example of those light bulb moments in our lives, since most of us make a discovery when the X-ray is shown to us. We find out something we could discover no other way, unless you have X-ray vision. Enlightenment about something we need to learn can be like this. Where we were looking through a glass darkly once, the true reflection of the experience then becomes crystal clear. I'm pretty rambunctious, and once when I was a teenager I broke my own hand by striking a 2x4. I thought it was padded, but when you hit solid wood with the side of your hand, you may break the upper joint of your little finger. It's not excruciating, but it really, really hurts. You could probably still drive a car, but you wouldn't be happy about it. I was convinced it was broken, but try as I might, I couldn't convince the parents to let it get X-rayed. When you're 14, your options are limited. You can't drive yourself to the doctor, and even when you get there, no one's going to X-ray your hand because you say it hurts. But after 2 weeks of moaning and groaning, I finally wore them down, and into the X-ray machine my hand went. The doctor looked serious. It made me kind of happy because I was thinking I was right. "It is broken," he said, and I thrilled at the proof, but it was short-lived. He only paused momentarily and continued, "It looks like what we'll have to do is break it again since it has started to heal crooked." I instinctively grabbed the injured hand and declared it had been feeling much better lately. After a short consultation, we all decided it could continue to heal in an unstraightened, unrebroken way and there wouldn't be a problem. It's still bent, but I can't tell you when it's going to rain. It's quite an insight to find out you were right. The hand was broken, but another interesting insight to find out you suddenly don't want it fixed. Another X-ray provided not such a happy insight. I've explained before that I often have sinus problems, which vexed my doctor until he took an X-ray of my head. He was as surprised as I was to discover I have extra sinuses, which extend beyond the usual eyebrow portrayal you usually see in those sinus headache commercials. I have extra sinuses, as in they extend almost to the top of my head. It was a great moment of insight for both of us, since extra sinuses could be an explanation for my almost continuous sinus congestions, headaches, and infections. But again, sometimes an insight is not such a happy discovery. He was all smiles and excited, like he had discovered another branch of the human species, Homo sinicus. But the more I thought about it, the less I liked it. He looked at me and exclaimed, "This explains what's been going on with your sinuses," as if I was cured. But all I could think about was the limited space available in any head. There's room for sinuses, and there's room for brains. Apparently, I needed more sinuses than normal, which means I have less room for brains. It's a sad day when your doctor tells you in a roundabout way that you have a smaller brain than everyone else, but it does explain much of what has happened in the rest of my life. Next time I am pulled over for a speeding ticket, I'm going to try the less brains defense. "Sorry, officer, but I have a smaller brain than your average driver, so..." Well, it might work. The best X-ray in the world was the one which discovered the cancer in my wife's ribs. She'd been experiencing pain she thought was cracked ribs, and when the doctor said it was probably cancer, both our lives changed forever. 2 surgeries, chemotherapy, hair loss, hair regrowth, and the passage of 15 years has found her in official remission. She was brave, I was scared, but we both survived. Better than an X-ray, these insights discover our determination, direction, and our weaknesses. Now that we have a new truth in our grasp, what are we going to do about it? That was a selection from Dane Allred's Rules of Engagement called X-Ray Insight. Today, we are examining compassion, number 242 from my list, I call 1001 Thanks. It's a list of 1001 things I'm thankful for to find in this universe of abundance. Do you have compassion? Can you find sympathy for the suffering of others? Do you have a desire to help those who are less fortunate than you? You'll hear a lot of different things on abundance, maybe some musings about my week, usually a selection from famous writers or a poem or two, a chapter from my murder mystery, some original poetry, maybe something to motivate you and me, and to motivate me to make us understand how we can have compassion, be compassionate, or maybe just try to understand someone else's point of view. Watch out. You may gain some insight into yourself and everybody else. You never know what's next on Abundance. Christmas Bells by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. I heard the bells on Christmas Day, their old familiar carols play, and wild and sweet the words repeat, of peace on earth, goodwill to men. And thought how, as the day had come, the belfries of all Christendom had rolled along the unbroken song of peace on earth, goodwill to men. Till ringing, singing, on its way the world revolved from night to day, a voice, a chime, a chant sublime of peace on earth, goodwill to men. Then from each black accursed mouth the cannon thundered in the south, and with the sound the carols drowned of peace on earth, goodwill to men. It was as if an earthquake rent the hearthstones of a continent and made forlorn the households born of peace on earth, goodwill to men. And in despair I bowed my head. There is no peace on earth, I said, for hate is strong and mocks the song of peace on earth, goodwill to men. Then pealed the bells, more loud and deep. God is not dead, nor doth he sleep. The wrong shall fail, the right prevail, with peace on earth, goodwill to men. Dane Allred's World of Hurt, three kinds of buzzing insects. don't know why I thought I'd be a good beekeeper, but once I read the classified ad that offered a complete beekeeping setup for $100, I was hooked. I plunked down the money and got bee boxes, a bee suit, and a beekeeping helmet. Now all I needed was the bees. Believe it or not, you can order bees through the mail, and you pick them up at your local post office. It was a small box filled with bees and a special holding area just for the queen. I picked it up at the post office and started my beekeeping adventures. It really isn't hard to do since the bees do all the work and you can harvest the honey of their labors. However, gathering the honey is something that was beyond me. Every time I tried to get some of the golden nectar, I was repeatedly stung. As secure as you try to make the outfit, the little stingers find a way in, even if you've tried to quiet them down with a little smoke. I guess smoke makes them worried about a fire close by, so they hunker down and act a little less frantic. I wish I had video footage of me running from the backyard to the front, slapping myself in the various places I was being stung. I was finally able to harvest some honeycomb, but had no idea how to extract the honey. I kind of sucked some honey out of the waxy honeycomb and even chewed on a little of the sweet wax, but that was the only production for my beekeeping efforts, and I was such a bad beekeeper that either all the bees died by the next year or they got tired of stinging me and left for sweeter pastures. Another stinging insect I encountered resided in the hills behind my home. I have admired the mountains behind Springville for several years, and they have a beautiful ruggedness that calls for someone to climb them. I was only wearing jogging shoes, and I guess I was thinking there would be a beaten path all the way to the top, but surprisingly few people have ever climbed any but the most popular mountain trails around here, and I doubt fewer than 100 have climbed where I went. The top of the mountain is called Mount Buckley, but I went sideways up the mountain from the subdivision above us. This route probably added miles to the hike, but it allowed me to go up the mountain through a wide pass I had been looking at for years from my backyard. From my house, it looked like there was a 5-foot tree in the middle of the pass. But when I got to it, I realized this tree was more than 30 feet tall and about 50 feet around. I have no idea how long it had to be growing there in that dry wash to reach that size. As I climbed the ridgeline, looking for places to climb higher, which didn't require scaling cliffs, I passed by an amazing hillside. The dirt had sloughed off onto the mountain below, and there was a wide and a long bar of dirt facing south. It must have been 50 to 75 feet tall and over 200 feet long. But the most amazing thing about it was that it was completely inhabited with thousands or perhaps millions of wasps. We've had wasp problems in my house for years, and I used to try to eliminate them. Now I just tolerate them unless they're building nests on the porch. There is no way we will ever be rid of wasps there, because buzzing in front of me was the mother lode. None of them bothered me, and I determined not to bother them by hiking up a little higher before I went farther north. Along the way, I encountered a beautiful meadow full of yellow flowers and one huge plant with hundreds of bumblebee-like insects buzzing around it. They were huge, and I was seriously tempted to touch them just to see if they were real. I couldn't resist, so I put my hand up to the plant, and the bees climbed on my hand and flew around my body. They didn't seem threatened, since I doubt that ever had many encounters with humans at all. We were 2 hours away from the nearest other human, and all they did was buzz around me and crawl on my hands. I don't know what I would have done if they had stung me and I had suffered from an allergic reaction. I think I like wild flying insects better than the domesticated kind. Right Space, Compassion by Dane Allred. We've all met before. We were in the bright space together before we were here. Since you know everyone who has ever lived or will live or who lives now, what excuse can we have not to have compassion for one another? We are here to learn all we can about this experience, and someday we will return and share our feelings, knowledge, and this universe will know what it means to be rich or poor, oppressed or free, healthy or ill. We will have experienced every kind of life there is to live. But while we are here, we only have enough love for those like us. We don't want to know about the others struggling against the evils of the world. We don't want to help those who need us because they are different than us. We don't want to know about the suffering going on all around us. It might spoil our moment of happiness or interrupt our regular routine. The secret of those who are truly happy is learning to enjoy a new routine involving someone else. When we get outside ourselves and help those who need our help, direct those who need direction, we will find new direction for ourselves and help for those problems we face. Since we have always known each other, there is no excuse for not reaching out, for helping where we can, listening, if that's what is needed, for doing those things for others we wish they would do for us. What is it that we are so afraid of? Do we fear that connection we feel when we meet someone new, thinking there is something we recognize about that other person, a familiarity we sense, a strange feeling we have met before, a love we share that we have shared before? How can we not have compassion for someone we knew so long ago and have met again for the first time in this life? Reach out. Find that friend again. Literature Out Loud, Compassion Nut by Dane Allred. That person can't hurt as much as I do, can they? There's no way they've gone through what I've gone through. Could they? There's nothing I could do to help them heal, could I? There is no way they could feel what I feel. Could they? It's nutty to think I could help them out, isn't it? But compassion is what it's all about, isn't it? Then call me Compassion Nut. Literature Out Loud, Sonnet 66 by William Shakespeare. Tired with all these, for restful death I cry, as to behold desert a beggar born, and needy nothing trimmed in jollity, and purest faith unhappily forsworn, and gilded honor shamefully misplaced, and maiden virtue rudely strumpeted, and right perfection wrongfully disgraced, and strength by limping sway disabled, and art made tongue-tied by authority, and folly doctor-like controlling skill, and simple truth miscalled simplicity, and captive good attending captain ill. Tired with all these, from these would I be gone, save that to die I leave my love alone. Literature Out Loud, Sonnet 67 by William Shakespeare. Ah, wherefore with infection should he live, and with his presence, grace, impiety, that sin by him advantage should achieve, and lace itself with his society? Why should false painting imitate his cheek, and steal dead seeing of his living hue? Why should poor beauty indirectly seek roses of shadow, since his rose is true? Why should he live? Now nature bankrupt is, beggared of blood to blush through lively veins. For she hath no exchequer now but his, and proud of many, lives upon his gains. Oh, him she stores, to show what wealth she had in days long since, before these last so bad. Literature Out Loud, Sonnet 68 by William Shakespeare. Thus is his cheek the map of days outworn, when beauty lived and died as flowers do now, before the bastard signs of fair were born, or durst inhabit on a living brow, before the golden tresses of the dead, the rite of sepulchres were shorn away, to live a second life on second head, ere beauty's dead fleece made another gay. In him those holy antique hours are seen, without all ornament, itself and true, making no summer of another's green, robbing no old to dress his beauty new. And him, as for a map doth nature store, to show false art what beauty was of yore. Literature Out Loud, Sonnet 69 by William Shakespeare. Those parts of thee that the world's eye doth view want nothing that the thought of hearts can mend. All tongues, the voice of souls, give thee that due, uttering bare truth, even so as foes commend. Thy outward, thus with outward praises crowned, But those same tongues that give thee so thine own in other accents do this praise confound by seeing farther than the eye hath shown. They look into the beauty of thy mind, and that in guess they measure by thy deeds. Then churls their thoughts, although their eyes were kind, to thy fair flower add the rank smell of weeds. But why, thy odor matcheth not thy show. To solve is this, that thou dost common grow. Literature Out Loud, Sonnet 70 by William Shakespeare. That thou art blamed shall not be thy defect, for slander's mark was ever yet the fair. The ornament of beauty is suspect, a crow that flies in heaven's sweetest air. So thou be good, slander doth but approve thy worth the greater, being wooed of time, for canker vice the sweetest buds doth love, and thou presentest a pure, unstained prime. Thou hast passed by the ambush of young days, either not assailed or victor being charged. Yet this thy praise cannot be so thy praise, to tie up envy evermore enlarged. If some suspect of ill masked not thy show, then thou alone kingdoms of hearts shouldest owe. I have endeavored in this ghostly little tale to raise the ghost of an idea which shall not put my listeners out of humor with themselves, with each other, with the season, or with me. May it haunt their houses pleasantly, and no one wish to lay it by. Your faithful friend and servant, Charles Dickens. Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. Stave 1. Marley's Ghost. Marley was dead, to begin with. There is no doubt whatever about that. Old Marley was as dead as a doornail. Scrooge knew he was dead? Of course he did. How could it be otherwise? Scrooge and he were partners for I don't know how many years. Scrooge, was his sole executor, his sole administrator, his sole friend, and sole mourner. The mention of Marley's funeral brings me back to the point I started from. There is no doubt that Marley was dead. This must be distinctly understood, or nothing wonderful can come of the story I am going to relate. Scrooge never painted out old Marley's name. There it stood years afterwards, above the warehouse door, Scrooge and Marley. The firm was known as Scrooge and Marley. Sometimes people new to the business called Scrooge Scrooge, and sometimes Marley. He answered to both names. It was all the same to him. Oh, but he was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone, Scrooge. A squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. External heat and cold had little influence on Scrooge. No warmth could warm, no wintry weather chill him. Nobody ever stopped him on the street with gladsome looks to say, "My dear Scrooge, how are you? When will you come to see me?" No beggars implored him to bestow a trifle. No children asked him what it was o'clock. No man or woman ever once in all his life inquired the way to such and such a place of Scrooge. But what did Scrooge care? It was the very thing he liked, to edge his way along the crowded paths of life, warning all human sympathy to keep its distance. Once upon a time, of all the good days in the year, upon a Christmas Eve, old Scrooge sat busy in his counting house. It was cold, bleak, biting, foggy weather. The door of Scrooge's counting house was open, that he might keep his eye upon his clerk, who, in a dismal little cell beyond, a sort of tank, was copying letters. "Ah, Merry Christmas, Uncle! God save you!" cried a cheerful voice. It was the voice of Scrooge's nephew, who came upon him so quickly that this was the first intimation he had of his approach. "Bah!" said Scrooge. "Humbug!"
"Christmas a humbug, Uncle? You don't mean that, I am sure."
"I do. Out upon Merry Christmas. If I had my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart. He should."
"Uncle!"
"Nephew, keep Christmas in your own way, and let me keep it in mine."
"Keep it, but you don't keep it."
"Let me leave it alone, then. Much good may it do you, much good it has ever done you."
There are many things from which I might have derived good, by which I have not profited, I dare say, Christmas among the rest. But I am sure I have always thought of Christmas time, when it has come round, as the only time I know of when men and women seem to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that it has done me good and will do me good. And I say, God bless it.
You're quite a powerful speaker, sir. I wonder you don't go into the Parliament.
Don't be angry, Uncle. Come, dine with us tomorrow.
Why did you get married?
Because I fell in love.
Because you fell in love, growled Scrooge, as if that were the only one thing in the world more ridiculous than a Merry Christmas. Good afternoon.
Nay, Uncle, but you never came to see me before that happened. Why give it as a reason for not coming now?
Good afternoon.
I want nothing from you. I ask nothing of you. Why cannot we be friends?
Good afternoon.
I am sorry with all my heart to find you so resolute, but I'll keep my Christmas humor to the last, so a Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Good afternoon.
And a Happy New Year.
Good afternoon.
His nephew left the room without an angry word, notwithstanding. The clerk, in letting Scrooge's nephew out, had let two other people in. They were portly gentlemen, pleasant to behold, and now stood with their hats off in Scrooge's office.
"Scrooge and Marley's, I believe," said one of the gentlemen, referring to his list. "Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?"
"Mr. Marley has been dead these 7 years. He died 7 years ago this very night."
"At this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge," said the gentleman,
taking up a pen,
it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute who suffer greatly at the present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessaries. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts, sir.
Are there no prisons?
Plenty of prisons, but a few of us are endeavoring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. Well, we choose this time because it is a time of all others when want is keenly felt, and abundance rejoices. What shall I put you down for?
Nothing.
You wish to be anonymous?
I wish to be left alone. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the prisons and the workhouses. They cost enough. And those who are badly off must go there.
Oh, many can't go there. And many would rather die.
If they would rather die, they'd better do it and decrease the surplus population. It's not my business. Mine occupies me constantly. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Seeing clearly that it would be useless to pursue their point, the gentleman withdrew. Scrooge resumed his labors with an improved opinion of himself, and in a more facetious temper than was usual with him. The cold became intense, foggier yet and colder, piercing, searching, biting cold. At length, the hour of shutting up the counting house arrived. With an ill will, Scrooge dismounted from his stool, tacitly admitted the fact to the expectant clerk in the tank, who instantly snuffed his candle out and put on his hat.
You'll want all day tomorrow, I suppose.
If quite convenient, sir.
It's not convenient and it's not fair. If I was to stop half a crown for it, you'd think yourself ill-used, I'll be bound.
Yes, sir.
And yet you don't think me ill-used when I pay a day's wages for no work.
It's only once a year, sir.
A poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. But I suppose you must have the whole day. Be here all the earlier the next morning.
The clerk promised that he would, and Scrooge walked out with a growl. The office was closed in a twinkling, and the clerk ran home to Camden Town as hard as he could pelt. Scrooge went home to bed. He lived in chambers which had once belonged to his deceased partner. The yard was so dark that even Scrooge, who knew its every stone, was fain to grope with his hands. Now, it is a fact that there was nothing at all particular about the knocker on the door, except that it was very large. And then let any man explain to me, if he can, how it happened that Scrooge, having his key in the lock of the door, saw not a knocker, but Marley's face. Marley's face. It was not angry or ferocious, but it looked at Scrooge as Marley used to look, with ghostly spectacles turned up on its ghostly forehead. As Scrooge looked fixedly at this phenomenon, it was a knocker again. Up Scrooge went, not caring a button for its being very dark. Darkness is cheap, and Scrooge liked it. But before he shut his heavy door, he walked through his rooms to see that all was right. Quite satisfied, he closed his door and locked himself in, double-locked himself in, which was not his custom. Thus secured against surprise, he took off his cravat, put on his dressing gown, slippers, his nightcap, and sat down before the very low fire to take his gruel. As he threw his head back in the chair, Scrooge heard a clanking noise deep down below, as if some person were dragging a heavy chain over the casks in the wine merchant's cellar. Scrooge then remembered to have heard that ghosts in haunted houses were described as dragging chains. The cellar door flew open with a booming sound, and then he heard the noise much louder on the floors below, then coming up the stair, then coming straight towards his door. It came on through the heavy door, and a specter passed into the room before his eyes. The same face, the very same. Marley. Though he looked the phantom through and through and saw it standing before him, though he felt the chilling influence of its death-cold eyes, he was still incredulous and fought against his senses.
How now? What do you want with me? Much.
Marley's voice. No doubt about it.
Who are you?
Ask me who I was.
Who are you then?
In life, I was your partner. Jacob Marley.
Can you sit down?
I can.
Do it then.
Scrooge fell upon his knees and clasped his hands before his face.
Mercy, dreadful apparition, why do you trouble me? Man of the worldly mind, do you believe in me or not?
I do. I must.
You are fettered. Tell me why.
I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard. I girded it on of my own free will. And of my own free will, I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you, or would you know the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? It was as heavy and as long as this 7 Christmas Eves ago. You have labored on it since. It is a ponderous chain.
Scrooge glanced about him on the floor, in the expectation of finding himself surrounded by some 50 or 60 fathoms of iron cable. But he could see nothing.
I cannot tell you all I would. My spirit never walked beyond our counting house. Mark me, in life, my spirit never roved beyond the narrow limits of our money-changing hole. And weary journeys lie before me.
But you were always a good man of business, Jacob.
Business. Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, and benevolence were all my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business. Hear me. My time is nearly gone.
I will, but don't be hard upon me, Jacob, pray.
I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate. A chance and hope of my procuring, Ebenezer. You will be haunted by 3 spirits.
Is that the chance and hope you mention, Jacob? I think I'd rather not.
Without their visits, you cannot hope to shun the path I tread. Expect the first tomorrow night, when the bell tolls 1. Expect the second on the next night at the same hour. The third upon the next night, when the last stroke of 12 has ceased to vibrate.
Look to see me no more, and look that for your own sake. You remembered what has passed between us.
It walked backward from him, and at every step it took, the window raised itself a little so that, when the spectre reached it, it was wide open. Scrooge closed the window and examined the door by which the ghost had entered. It was double-locked, as he had locked it with his own hands, and the bolts were undisturbed. Scrooge tried to say, "Humbug," but stopped at the first syllable. And being from the emotion he had undergone, or the fatigues of the day, or his glimpse of the invisible world, or the dull conversation of the ghost, or the lateness of the hour, much in need of repose, he went straight to bed without undressing, and fell asleep upon the instant.